You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Alistair McLeod with me once again. Most of you know Alistair because he is one of the most frequent guests on this show. He does write an essay, a very important essay that's timed with market conditions. Every Thursday comes out, and you can access that by going to goldmoney.com. It is, it's the research page at goldmoney.com. And I urge you to read his material. It's not light necessarily, because Alistair really gets into the nitty gritty of what is underneath the markets and why they do behave the way they do. So it's not necessarily the easiest reading, although he explains very difficult topics in a way that we can all understand. And I wouldn't go without it. It's certainly one of the most important things that I look forward to reading every week. So Alistair, thank you so much for joining me again.
That's very much my pleasure, Jay.
I would like to have you talk a little bit about a couple of your most recent essays. I think it was September 8th, an Asian Bretton Woods, And then the 15th, the following week, Inflation is Turning Hyper. Because I believe those two are very, very important and timely essays that should help people recognize what may be coming down the track and what they and try to be as ready as possible for these events that if they occur. It seems to be that the news that we get from our side is constantly highlighting Putin's military failures. So we hear, oh, Putin thought he could go in there in a week, wipe the place clean and own all of the Ukraine. Look at all the problems he's having, and no doubt he is having some problems. But it seems to me that what we hardly ever hear about are Putin's economic gains, the gains that Russia has made as a result of sanctions. In your essay, you stated that Putin was thinking several steps ahead of NATO countries when he invaded the Ukraine. Maybe could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, of course. I mean, Putin, I think, had a game plan right from the start. He had an objective, which was basically to get American influence out of European affairs and for NATO to move their missiles west, as it were, because there is no doubt that from his point of view, he feels very much threatened by the presence of an American-led NATO on his western boundary. So plainly, he had an objective, and that was to get America out. Now, how do we know this? We know this because America has been on the run. Syria was a disaster. The exit from Afghanistan was equally a disaster. I think he has made an assessment of President Biden. And while President Trump was unpredictable and therefore someone that you had to be very, very careful with, I think he's probably taken the view that President Biden is an easier quantity to deal with. And he's been, I think, therefore encouraged to, at this moment, to make his push. And the way he has done it, is quite simply, is by attacking the eastern end of Ukraine, which is predominantly Russian anyway. You're right. The campaign hasn't been an unmitigated success. It's been a bit more mixed. But the problem, I think, that we have in the West is that as much as Russia feeds out propaganda about its position, the West is feeding out propaganda about Russia's position. When I read the papers here, I mean, I look at the Telegraph, for example, which is very supportive of the Conservative Party in general and is very supportive of the Conservative Party's and NATO's position on Ukraine. And you hear absolutely nothing about you know, any sort of success or any plans that Putin has, all you hear are his disasters. And so I think we've got to look at this with open eyes. The situation, I think, is it's not a sort of total win or anything like that for Putin. No, far from it. But what he's achieving, I think, is not so much on the battlefield, but it's economically. What he has done is he's forced NATO members into sanctioning Russia, and he has benefited hugely from that. There is absolutely no question. If you read the Western press, you would think that you know, the Russian economy is suffering. It's not. It's actually doing very, very well. Thank you very much. And I have no doubt that, I mean, Putin is a very canny operator, and he will have thought through the likely response to the invasion of the Ukraine. He would have foreseen the West sanctions against him. And what he's done, actually, and this is the interesting thing, is it's driven neutral parties very much into the Asian camp. I would cite in particular the situation for Saudi Arabia. And it was fascinating that when President Biden went to Saudi Arabia, really pleading for Saudi Arabia to up its oil output so to replace the lost Russian energy output, he really got a bit of a cold shoulder. And we now discover that actually Mohammed bin Salman is thinking that he's got to go and join the BRICS or something. Now, I don't know that's true, but what I do know, and I had this, I interviewed a director of one of the big Swiss refiners back in 2014, and he told me that the Arabs were sending him LBMA 400-ounce bars for refining and reprocessing into the new Chinese 4.9's 1 kilo standard. And they weren't selling it. They were taking it back in. Now, this is fascinating. So what I'm saying is that as long ago as 2014, some forward thinkers in the Middle East were beginning to realize that their future is more with Asia than with Europe and America. And what are we doing? I mean, we're turning around and saying we're going to ban all fossil fuels. I can't think of a more complete set of circumstances to drive the world's energy producers very much into the Asian camp. And it has allowed Putin to consolidate the position hugely with all the nations in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the Eurasian Economic Union, the BRICS, and sundry others, simply because he's prepared to sell them oil, gas, coal, and take payment in their own currencies. Now, these currencies are, in many cases, complete rubbish. I mean, like the Turkish lira, like the Iranian rial, and so on. So, I mean, this what he's doing is he is giving these countries, his allies, as it were. He's saying, you be an ally of mine, and you can get very cheap energy, and lots of it, as much as you need, in order to industrialize. So what's India doing? I mean, they're going for it big time.
Sure.
You know, we've really shot ourselves in the foot in this one. And I think the game is far, far bigger than just Ukraine, if you like.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No question about it. Maybe just take a minute to talk a little bit about how Russia has fared since the sanctions.
Well, basically, I mean, it's interesting because if you talk to a Keynesian, you know, he looks at the currency and sees the currency having actually risen against the dollar. It's the best performing currency in the world at the moment. And he would say that's deflationary. You know, and then you talk to the oligarchs who actually have been squeezed by this because they've lost their yachts and, you know, they can't make the trips to London and Paris. You know, buy all the fancy kit and so on and so forth. You know, their lifestyle has been cramped hugely by this. But if you, I mean, just imagine, I mean, the Russian economy has, I think, a flat rate of tax of about 13%. There are really no other major taxes. There's a sales tax, certainly, like a value-added tax. But other than that, I mean, you've got an economy which is not burdened by the state. I mean, okay, property rights could be could leave a lot to be desired.
Yeah, but, sure.
You know, basically, if you keep your head down, your nose clean, and just get on with your business, I mean, as an ordinary businessman, you're actually in a pretty good position in Russia. So mm-hmm. it's not nearly as bad as we're making it out. Yeah. There is another aspect to this, Jay, which you might want to come on to, and that is his plans for, if you like, underwriting the ruble as a currency. There is no doubt in my mind that they're moving towards gold.
Yeah. Yes, I would like to go. I'd like to have you talk about that. Just also would like to mention, I think it was a statistic that I picked up from you, that Russia's debt to GDP is something like 35% compared to our 135% in the U.S. So, I mean, it seems as though the Keynesians here, as you, I think you'd blame the Keynesians, seem not to fear at all the enormous amounts of debt and the constant wars that are bringing on more debt to finance. Whereas, you know, Russia seems to be building their economy in a much more sane way than we are.
Yes, that's absolutely right. As far as our economy is concerned, we are now in a debt trap. We have had to expand the amount of government debt very substantially over COVID. We just shut down the whole economy, and the consequences of that are still working through, and will require yet more government support, which basically means yet more deficit. Mm-hmm. And now in Europe, and I've yet to see what President Biden is going to be doing, but in Europe, the basic approach is to pay much of the excess energy costs that both individuals and businesses face. I mean, we're supposed to be capping energy bills at £2,500 per household. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how they're going to effectively do that, and I don't know what's included. I mean, for example, I have oil-fired central heating. Is that included? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And how do you work this one with business? Business have got all sorts of different conditions, deals, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But there is no doubt. There is no doubt that if these energy prices continue to rise, and believe you me, the money will be made available to pay the higher prices, which is the point behind inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And under those circumstances, we can see that budget deficits are going to increase yet more. So far from COVID being a one-off inflationary event, it's being followed by another. And it will be followed by another and another and another, which was the point about the second article that you referenced.
Right.
We are, in effect, on the road to hyperinflation, and I have no doubt in my mind about that at all.
Okay, so that leads me to ask you then to talk about the one last thing in Putin's jigsaw, and that is a new currency system. And, you know, why would he want to do that? Maybe you can talk about what would motivate him for a new currency system, and what kind of a currency system does he have in mind and he's talking about? Perhaps you could share that with our listeners.
Yeah, well, let's address the first point you raised. Why is he doing it? I've taken the view for a long time that for Russia and China to declare their gold reserves would rather be like a financial nuclear weapon, if you like, being triggered. Because, I mean, we now know, actually, that Russia, not only in the central bank, but also in another account, have a total of about 12,000 tons of gold, and it is continuing to accumulate gold. Now, this is more than the declared reserves of the U.S. Treasury. So putting it in that context, this is interesting. This is very interesting. I think that what's happened is that rather than the policy in the past has been to let America basically hang itself monetarily, I think now that the emphasis is that they can see the hyperinflationary trend very clearly, to a large extent exacerbated by the sanctions against Russia. And I think what Putin is now thinking is that he needs to protect himself from a currency collapse in the West. I mean, there's no doubt from his utterances, he's got a pretty good handle on the dangers that we have put ourselves in through monetary policy. So I think he's now looking to protect himself. Now, very, very briefly, there are two hairs running on this. The first one is the new trade settlement currency that Sergei Glazyev, who was a senior minister, he leads a commission for the Eurasian Economic Union looking at setting up a new trade settlement currency to do away with the dollar. And you know, he's been going round and round in circles saying this thing, that thing, and all the rest of it. But it is quite clear that this trade settlement currency can only work properly and allow other people to join in if it is purely a new currency which is fixed to gold on a daily basis in the various participating currencies. Now, that is fine. I can understand that. He will get there, I am sure. The thing that's interesting is that separately, Moscow has declared that it's setting up a new Moscow gold standard because they've been booted out of the LBMA. So, but the thing that's interesting about this is that the person who's actually running this new show is, guess who? Sergei Glazyev, the same guy. So, and I think what we're likely to find is that gold, it will indeed be the new settlement standard. And this would make sense because from Putin's point of view, he's gone to people like the Turks and the Iranians and so on with their awful currencies and said, we will take payment in your currency. Mm-hmm. I think what he's going to do, he's going to turn round to them and say, we've got this new trade settlement currency, which is tied to the price of gold. We will deal with that in future. And I think that would really secure his position. And it would also allow other nations in that Asian bloc to come together and put their currencies on a gold standard if they wish to do so. And this is entirely, I think, it looks to me like this is moving towards a sort of master plan, which really means that our fiat currencies are either going to die or at some stage, we have got to accept this reality. Mm-hmm. Now, if we do go back on a gold standard, I would say that for all we don't like about President Putin, he will have done us a huge favor by bringing some discipline back into Western currencies.
Mm-hmm. I would certainly agree with that. And I just wonder then, there's really no place. Oh, what I was thinking is, I think what was proposed was that that this new monetary system would include various currencies and various commodities. And why then are you saying the only way it will work is if it's gold? Why this idea of having these various assets as part of the currency is a non-starter from your point of view?
Well, I think the problem is that the you know, the feed that we're getting through the media is that this new currency will be comprised of a mixture of the currencies of the nations participating and the major commodities which they trade. Mm-hmm. Now, this means that the whole thing would have to be rebalanced all the time. It's from that point of view, it is nonsensical. And every time someone says, "Oi, we'd quite like to join in this," I mean, you know, there's no way that this is actually going to be a practical proposition. So the first thing I would state is, take the currencies out of it. That is not that's just a distraction, and obviously so. So, once you take them out, you're then looking at commodities. And the other thing you must do is take out this idea that it's going to be the commodities which everybody trades in, you know, giving it some sort of weighting. Mm-hmm. No, what you need to do, if you're just looking at a basket of commodities, is just take representative samples of base metals, precious metals, agricultural products, which are non-cyclical, and so on and so forth. And, you know, then what you actually end up with is an average, which, believe it or not, pretty accurately tracks the price of gold. So why fuck around? Just, just go for gold.
And simplify it.
In the article on the Asian Bretton Woods, I actually go through the charts, and you can see how, progressing through the various recommendations and how they should evolve, you actually end up with the obvious answer. Do it in gold.
Do it in gold. Yeah. All right. Maybe just touching on your inflation is turning hyper. You ended that article by saying the following. You said, we can begin to anticipate the path to the destruction of purchasing power for all fiat currencies, not just those of Zimbabwe, Turkey, and Venezuela et al. A global hyperinflation is proving impossible to avoid. Why is it impossible to avoid? Is it political? Is it just basically that they have to print money like mad and give it out to people so they can meet these expenses? Or why is it? Why couldn't we still, at this late stage, do the right thing and go back to honest money? It's going to be forced on us, I guess.
I think in a nutshell, Jay, it is political. There is a huge cost, economic cost, of returning to sound money. What governments must do in order to do that is that they need to, if you like, accept that there is a lot of business in the economy which actually shouldn't exist. It's zombie corporations, if you like.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
They should be allowed to fail. The institutions that support them should be allowed to fail. And not only that, but you're looking at small businesses and all the rest of it, many of which, I'm afraid, have accumulated a lot of debt as a result of the shutdown over COVID. They mm-hmm. must be allowed to fail as well. Now, there is no way that as a deliberate act of economic policy that the political class can contemplate that course of action. They would mm-hmm. far rather try and do what they've done so far, and that is attempt to increase their control over us to stop markets actually forcing the pace of change. And that's something which they will eventually fail at. So I'm afraid that clamping down on our personal freedoms and all the rest of it is likely to get more intense before we have a general failure. And it could indeed continue to be yet more intense after a general economic failure. Mm-hmm. That is the way of it. This is the politics. This is the reality of politics. And mm-hmm. I think that it is really for this reason that when countries start on the hyperinflation track, and they start, and their currencies start being rejected by the people, the response basically is to just try and do more of the same to stop it happening. Mm-hmm. It always happens. I mean, take for example the situation over prices. We all know that the stupid thing to do is to cap prices,
right?
But, I mean, from Diocletian onwards, every politician has done that when they have met an inflation problem. They know it's not the right thing to do, but they feel they have got no option politically. And this is why I think the politics will be our undoing.
All right, with just a minute and a half or 2 minutes at most, I'd like to ask you about, you had an interesting notation or an interesting thought in that hyperinflation article talking about commercial bankers. They're trying to reduce their loans and how it's going to be thrown over to the central bank. The central bankers then will be, you know, generating liquidity and shoving it into the economy. And you said that this could be the death knell or the death blow, the coup de grace for fiat money. Could you just explain that? Why that is the banker's role in this whole fiasco?
Yes, I think the first thing to understand is that every transaction in GDP is actually done with commercial bank credit. It's bank deposits, if you like, being spent, or mm-hmm. bank credit being borrowed. Every transaction. Now, when therefore the banks decide that there is too much risk and their balance sheets are over leveraged, they will reduce their outstanding bank credit. And as a result, you will find that GDP declines. And I think it's a point missed by virtually every commentator. When an economy declines, it's not necessarily because people suddenly decided to spend less or produce less. It is because the banks are withdrawing credit.
Uh-huh.
Understand that and you'll understand what drives GDP. And you will therefore understand the likely reaction of the authorities to a declining GDP.
Mm-hmm. So just unleash the central banks, let them print money and helicopter money to everybody and let her rip, I guess.
Well, that's something on those lines is bound to happen. because, as I said earlier, the politics of it are that they just cannot afford to see an economy go into a deep recession, slump, depression, whatever you like to call it.
All right. We'll have to leave it go at that. Alistair, thank you so much for your insights and sharing them with our listeners. It's always a pleasure having you.
My pleasure, Jay.
All right, folks, that is it for this week. Next week, Bob Moriarty, Michael Oliver, and Quentin Henning join me. Quentin will be here to talk about Lion One Metals. Until next week, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.